United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is this a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway.
11 minutes after 8 here on a Friday. Joining me is the All Marine Radio head chef. Coming up on 2 years in that position, Kim Holmes. Kim, first of all, good morning. Happy Friday. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me as always. It's a pleasure. You know it.
When you put your resume out, do you put head chef All Marine Radio? Do you put that on there?
Oh hell yes! Are you kidding me?
you better.
How many? Well, there is a head chef of the Marines, but
yeah,
of All Marine Radio, I don't think.
Come on,
so.
Yeah, don't even go there with me.
I think I'm the one and only, baby. And it's a major honor for me.
Well, we hope it is. Well, coming up on two years though, that's pretty amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it is. And you look back at all the different interviews that are in our archives. Pretty cool. Hey, I want to ask you. We were talking earlier this week about a show that's on Lifetime Television. It's called I Am Elizabeth Smart. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
You should check it out. You should check it out, and I'd be curious to know your thoughts. Obviously, Elizabeth Smart is the girl from Salt Lake City who was kidnapped.
Yeah,
and
captured.
Right, and held for about 9 months when she was 14 years of age, and raped repeatedly. They lived in a tent, her story is incredible.
I remember her story. Didn't she? Wasn't she in a house in the?
They lived in a tent. Lived in a tent, and then they went from outside Salt Lake City to outside San Diego. And what's incredible about her is that she's not a hater. She's gone on to a career in child advocacy. But the thing in terms of as veterans, why it appealed to Mike and I think spoke to me is she talks about, trauma in your life and that life is worth living. You can be happy. And here's this woman who went through this stuff at 14. And you watch it thinking, well, hell, if she can do it, right? But she's just an incredible, well-spoken woman. So it's called I Am Elizabeth Smart. And so
I've written it down.
All right, write it down. And I want you to – you need to review it and let us know what you think. I got an email for you. Mac, could you ask the chef when he comes on today about twice baked potatoes? One, is he a fan of them? Two, does he have a favorite way that he would prepare one? So, one, are you a fan of twice baked potatoes?
You're setting me up, or is this true?
No. I'm reading the email. Are you a fan of them?
Before, I'm a monster fan of twice baked potatoes.
Are you?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, before we came on the air today.
Whoa, we don't have to go there. Girlfriend?
I'm a fan of twice baked potatoes.
Okay.
And the way I'm preparing mine today.
Do you
want to hear that?
No. This is just a generic question about twice baked potatoes. So obviously you'll give us your choice. But we don't need to go into your personal life.
Well, I'm just saying. Okay. I happen to plan a twice baked potato with a steak today.
Ooh.
And then you asked me this question, and I got very excited. Because twice baked potatoes are monsters. Now, would you like me to talk about twice baked potatoes?
Yes, that's why I asked you. You got all involved with your personal life, and all I'm doing is reading an email.
Well, I was going to get into the preparation of twice baked potatoes.
You know what a twice baked potato is? It's you take sour cream and you take butter and you put it into a baked potato, right? And it just tastes.
Well, hold on.
It tastes delicious. A twice baked potato is taking that concoction and putting it on steroids.
Yes.
It's making that, which we all love. Alright.
Yes.
It's making that even better. But I have a question about the mechanics of twice baked potatoes first.
Yes.
Okay. So in terms of Do I bake the potato first and then scoop it out? How does this work?
Now, you wash your baked potato.
Right.
The larger the baked potato, the better it will be because you get more filling out, more meat out of the potato.
Okay.
But you wash it, you dry it, you take a little bit of olive oil and you rub it all over the potato.
Right.
And then you put kosher salt all over the potato.
To die for.
You sit it on a piece of foil or in a little foil pan. You bake it in the oven at, depending on the size of the potato, up to 50 minutes to an hour. end at 450 degrees. Now, you pull that potato out of the oven. First, before you put the potato in, you have to punch knife holes in the end so it doesn't explode.
Right.
Okay.
Can I ask you about my oven?
Yes.
Okay, so Colleen's taking Spanish now. So for extra credit or for an assignment, yeah, she made some Spanish dish with condensed milk, sweetened milk or something, evaporated milk, condensed milk, sugar. It was, I don't even know what she made. All I know, it was the stickiest thing that's ever been in our house. Okay, so, but at some point she baked it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how Colleen can get stuff everywhere, but she does. It's like on the ceiling, right? It's like under the sink. Like, and you see, whenever she's in the kitchen.
How's that possible?
I know, it's impossible. So she essentially annihilates the oven. She has stuff on the oven window, on the front door, and she goes, "What do I do? It's bubbling over." I said, "Put a piece of foil on the bottom if there's not one already." So she does that. And so yesterday, I said, "Come here, we're going to learn how to clean the oven today." So I get a little off cleaner,
yeah,
and I clean the window, yeah, and I take a straight edge razor blade that's in like a little scraper thing, which if you don't have one, you should go buy one right now. And I scrape the window, and that thing looks beautiful. I scrub the door a little bit, and then I said, "Now, I want to show you how you clean an oven. It's going to take a few hours, but watch. Look at what it looks like, okay?" And then the oven cleaner. I'm still blown away by how an oven cleans itself. The oven looks right now like it's never been used.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, oven cleaners, and then you apply them, you turn it on, then you shut it off, and then it just wipes right off.
Yeah, she looked at me, she's like, "That did that by itself?" She said, where did everything go? I said, "It went bye-bye. It burned it up." "Did you smell that stuff?" She said, "I know, but like about an hour ago, there was still black stuff on the bottom, and all of a sudden there's nothing except that silver-looking stuff."
I said,
"I don't know what happened to that." I said, "All I know is when you get stuff hot enough, everything burns. It goes bye-bye." She goes, "Wow."
Yeah.
She goes, "Wow." Okay. And so then we wiped it out, and now it looks absolutely beautiful. But, oven cleaning, unbelievable. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Okay, so we got the...
No, that's cool. That's a great story.
Yeah, we're still...
Domestic skills, way to go, Dad.
Oh, my God. Honestly, I don't know how she gets stuff where she gets it. On the counter, on the rim of the teapot. Like, how did you impact the teapot with this stuff? I don't know. Like, okay, you're starting to bug me, okay? And then I think I have it all cleaned up, and then I run my hand across the counter, and it just stops. In this goopy, sticky, sugary shit. And I'm like, "God damn it, Colleen." And Colleen! She's like, "Coming!" I'm like, "Really?" So, anyway. All right, so the potatoes go in the oven. For how long at what temperature? Big potatoes, too.
About 400, 450. And if you got a 500-degree oven, that's fine. You just make sure you don't overbake it. When a knife inserts easily and comes out, then your potato should be done. You take it out. You set it on the stove top. You let it cool a little bit so you can handle it. You cut the top off about two-thirds of the way up the baked potato. You have a dish that you mash your potatoes in with a potato masher. You scoop out what's in the skin and into the dish. Then you scoop out your potato inside. You leave a little bit around so the potato is still firm. You don't take every bit of it because you're down to the skin and then it breaks through. So you have to have a little wall of potato, but you have plenty in the bowl. Then you add, I'm adding a ounce.
Okay, hold on. And I just want to make sure. So when we cut the potato, we're going to cut the potato horizontally, but we're going to only take like the top third off so we leave a big boat so we can put all the potato back in.
Yes.
You're not going to cut it in half. You're going to cut it.
No. Right, you're doing a party and you've got 1 pound baked potatoes, you can cut them in half and do that. That's okay, but I have not a potato that much, that big. But I like them when they come up two-thirds, and so you do have a boat. Okay?
Got it.
So
okay.
Then in the bowl with the potatoes, you put about a half a stick of butter. I like lots of butter. a tablespoon of chopped chives, or a teaspoon of chopped chives per potato. And salt, pepper, and sour cream, and the cream cheese. Tablespoon of each of the sour cream and cream cheese. And then you mash all that together as smooth as you can. And then when we're in the restaurant, we put it in a pastry bag and pipe it back in the potato. But what you're going to do and what I'm going to do
Wait, I don't understand. A pastry bag, does that mean you squeeze it into the potato skin?
Yeah, you squeeze it. A pastry bag is like a funnel.
Right, okay.
And you fill up the bag. Then you grab, make sure don't fill it up too much so you can close the top and twist it. And then you squeeze from the top down to the bottom, and then you fill it up. But let's just, for our purpose, the easiest purpose, you take a big soup spoon, and then you scrape out the bowl, and you fill up your potato. And today, folks, I'm going to put about a tablespoon of grated white cheddar cheese and mix it all in with my potato mixture.
White cheddar.
So white cheddar, but Monterey Jack works equally as well. I like the they melt very well, those two cheeses. And if it's yellow cheddar, that's fine too. Then I mix all that together, then I fill the empty boat back up, and should mound up a little bit. And then I'll take a little bit of Parmesan cheese and kind of put it on the top so I have a little crust, or not. That's your call. And then a little paprika. And then I put it back in the oven, and I bake it for 20 to 30 minutes. And so it reheats the inside, it melts the cheese, and then when you pull that out, you put it on the plate with your beautiful ribeye.
Yeah.
And I'm making a Caesar salad, so that's my vegetable today. And then you have at it. But to me, a twice baked potato, you can make those all up a day ahead. If you're having a dinner party, it's something you can put in the fridge. My grandmother taught me. She did them all the day before. And then you pull them out. You let them sit on the countertop for a half an hour before you put them in the preheated 400 degree oven. You preheat it. You turn the heat down. You don't want it the 450 or 500. You want it between 350 and 375. to heat the potatoes up. You want them to heat a little slower so you don't burn the top, but it heats all the way through.
Okay, when you put them back in for 20 minutes, what temperature is that?
That's at 350 to 375.
Okay, and then so, and but you're checking it optically, and do you want a little crust on the top of the potato, or is that just a taste?
Yes. When the top browns, you don't want it blackened, but when it browns, that's why I put a little bit of Parmesan cheese on the top, because usually by the time that gets golden brown, your spud is done. But it, a good 20 minutes, sometimes it may take 30 minutes, but pretty much just 20 minutes should do it.
All right.
And then you plop that on the plate and have at it. But yeah, that's probably the greatest potato recipe. And this can also, you know, it's hard for me to get by just a regular baked potato with butter, sour cream, and bacon bits and chives or green onions on there. But with this, there's no mess, no muss, no fuss. You pull it out of the oven, you put it on the plate, and you eat it. And it can be done the day ahead. Now.
Okay. Now, just one more time. Go over the ingredients. You get the you scoop the potato out. Right, and you get that you get that in a bowl, and what are we putting in there?
Well, today I'll put in about a quarter of a stick. There's 4 sticks in a pound. I would put in about a quarter of that stick in the potato mix because I'm only doing one potato.
A quarter of a stick of butter.
Not a whole stick. A quarter of a quarter.
A quarter. That's not enough. What are you, like, sissy boy?
Well, put in half a quarter stick of butter.
Put in the whole quarter stick. Come on, man. We want this to be.
I'm telling you how to do it. Are you listening to me?
I am, but I didn't know we were going.
I'm only doing one potato. Now. Obviously, it's an eye thing with your butter.
A quarter? I know, but Kim, a quarter of a quarter stick? That's nothing. That's for little kids.
Okay, put a half a quarter of a stick in there.
I don't even think that's enough. I think you just drop the whole quarter stick in that sumbitch.
Then knock yourself out.
Huh?
You don't want it to be too runny.
Ugh. Is that even possible?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. All right.
Only, Mac, only because I am using sour cream and cream cheese. Now, if you're doing a monster batch and you don't like sour cream or cream cheese, then you use heavy whipping cream, like you're making mashed potatoes.
Yes.
But you have to have some kind of like chive or green onion in there and some kind of cheese mixed in there and salt and pepper to taste.
Okay.
Your taste.
My taste. All right. And then over the top is the paprika and the Parmesan cheese, yes?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Got it. All right. And that's your twice baked potato.
Oh, baby. You'll be in the front row with your family.
I remember the first time my mom made that.
Yeah. Oh gosh. You know what she also did?
She also would do that with zucchini. She called it stuffed zucchini.
Yeah.
She called it stuffed zucchini. Yeah. And she would bake the zucchini, and then she would scoop it out. She'd throw it in a bowl, and then throw all that good stuff in there. You know,
yeah.
There were kids I knew that never could even looked at a zucchini that annihilated my mom's stuffed zucchini. It was.
And she added breadcrumbs too, correct?
You know, and I off the top of my head, I can't remember what she added to the zucchini, but it was a similar mixture. It was a zucchini. It was obviously cheese, salt, pepper, garlic, a little bit of garlic in there. And I don't even know. I'm sure she probably did put some kind of bread in, breadcrumbs in there. Yeah. But let me tell you, it was.
The bigger the zucchini when you're doing this, the better the boat.
Right. The better the boat. Exactly. And then all it was ultimately a paste, that she would then scoop back in, and then she would put cheese over the top. Oh my God. It was delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely, positively delicious.
And I bless our parents and grandparents for teaching us these dishes. I tell you what.
Yeah. No, the carrot casserole that my mom that you had that goes with steak in the bag. Hello. The carrot casserole is, and it's easy as hell to make. You boil a batch of carrots. I don't know the exact measurements. You drain the water. You keep about a cup of water.
Yeah.
You mash the carrots. Into that, you throw 10 saltine crackers that you've crushed, right? You throw butter. You throw salt, pepper, and minced onion. Then you stir it all together, and then you pour the cup of water back in there. I think it's either 2/3 or 3/4 of a cup of water in there. And then you mix that up, and then you cover it with cheddar cheese, and you're done. And you throw that in the oven for about 25 minutes, get hot. It is, Kim, good?
Yo, it's better than good.
And especially, you're
walking in the clouds when you eat that.
Especially with, in my opinion, especially with a beef dish. You could eat it with, obviously, poultry or fish, and it tastes delicious all the time.
It's good with pork also. I've had it with pork.
But with beef, with some kind of steak. Oh, my God. Yeah. And so my mom had all these little, you know, little tweaks to recipes. And that we grew up eating that were absolutely delicious. Stuffed zucchini.
Yeah.
That was to die for. The other thing she loved to make, and made it rarely, she made it mostly for proms, was, and you talked about it about a month ago, was crown roast.
Oh, crown roast of pork.
With stuffing.
Yes.
With stuffing. And, oh my God, it was to die for. It was to die for. So instead of all of us spending $75 to take our dates out for proms, for prom, my mom would offer to cook us dinner. You can all come here, and I'll cook dinner. And so then, you know, so as we were juniors and seniors, and we'd go to different formal dances, when one would come up, they'd all look at me like, is your mom going to cook dinner? Like, you cheap bastards. Like, you don't want to buy dinner? Like, well, no, we'll buy it, but it's more fun. We sit in your house, we laugh, we have a good time, all of us are there, we don't have to be alone with our dates, because, you know, that might not be a good time, you know, it's a date after all.
And so,
my mom, Kathleen, was, and I have the table now in my home that we used to sit around. So it's my dining room table. And my mom had this wooden sun. She had this wooden sun on the wall, and it might be 4 feet in diameter, and it's this carved wooden, and it has rays coming out from the center, and in the center is kind of this round, mirror. It's shaped like kind of like a bowl, but that was on the wall, and that's out there. My sister gave that to me as well. So it's very cool.
You know what? You know what? My grandmother had one, and my brother has it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, but it's my mom's dining room. And that was the place where she loved to entertain. She knew she was a good cook. And she liked to show off her chops every once in a while. And it was always, the food was always fantastic. You know, suffice it to say. So it's very cool for me, to have that in my home. So I love having that. Here's another email. Does it matter what kind of potato you get for a twice baked potato? Kim?
No. What's your favorite potato? I'm partial to Red River red potatoes because they're grown in this valley. Any kind of potato, as long as it's large, will work. A russet potato works. Whatever your favorite spud is. That's my recommendation.
But hey, let me ask you, what is the major difference between the different potatoes? I don't
is there the water content in the potato?
And how does that translate to eating?
Well, the meat inside the potato,
right,
sometime can be a little bit loose and not as firm as, like, for me, the Red River Reds. They're a little denser potato, and it's just a preference for me.
Okay.
But, you know, they make French fries out of russets. They make excellent baked potatoes or twice baked stew. But I like that red skin. See, I eat the skin, and the skin on a Red River potato is fabulous to me. I mean, it's like I'm eating a piece of candy. So,
well, anyway, if you haven't prepared a baked potato the way Kim talks about, which is, you know, olive oil on the skin after you clean it, and then kosher salt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the skin winds up being every bit of the meal, as is the potato. The twice baked potato though is honestly is awesome. And Kathleen, I remember her bringing that home, and us going, "What is this?" But, you know, that question did go over very well with her. But what we learned, though, was we learned not to wrinkle our nose, because when Kathleen was experimenting normally, it was really incredible, stuff.
What I liked was the experiments, because I know they were going to be great, and I was going to eat something I'd never eaten before.
Yeah. And so, you know, at first when we were young, you know, we'd say, "What are you making, Mom?" And then as we got older, and we just always, we had good food. And then, you know, you go and you hang out at your friend's house, and you eat their mom, yeah, you eat their mom's food, and you go like, "That sucked." But, you know, but we were all good kids. I mean, you know, yeah, they.
"Oh, this is wonderful, Mrs. Whatever."
Yeah, this is great. And then you go home and you're talking to your mom, and you're like, "Oh, Mom, it was," and then you begin to appreciate if your mom was a great cook. And I know, like Mike Musselman, talks about, "Oh man, my mom could boil water." And she knew it. And she'd do it. So I cooked, my sister cooked. We all kind of jumped in there so that we could at least eat decent meals. And so, you know, as a kid, you know, you roll around, you learn that your mom is a great cook. And we were no different than any other kids, and that, we pretty soon figured out that we were pretty lucky that, our mom could cook. Our mom had major game, and when she experimented, it was a good thing. Here's another email. "Mac, I heard you talk once about cream tuna, and I started laughing. I remember my grandmother making cream tuna as a kid, and us having it every Friday night."
Yep.
"What are the elements of cream tuna?" Yeah, what are the elements of cream tuna, Kim? I know tuna is one of them.
Well, can't use these. When we were growing up, it was canned tuna, albacore tuna.
Right.
My mom preferred it packed in water, not oil.
Right.
And then you drain that off, and then you put that in a bowl, and then you put in the bowl some cream of celery soup, Campbell's cream of celery soup, a little bit of milk, and some cracker crumbs, Back then, it was the soda crackers, crunched up and thrown in, season it, and throw it into a chafing dish and bake it in the oven. We didn't add cheese back then, but if I was doing it now, I would add a little white cheese of some type of milk.
Right.
And then I would top it. My mom would top it with crushed potato chips.
Crushed potato chips?
You know what?
I love that kind of stuff, right?
Because I did. I ate that, and it was a Friday night. Even though I was Episcopalian, it was a Friday night fish dish. And if it wasn't that, it was fish sticks.
Yeah, we were big
but
on
yeah,
fish sticks.
I, when the tuna roll casserole came out of the oven and smelled so delish, I just went bonkers.
The my kids, I heard one of my kids saying, "I hate fish sticks." I said, "What?" I said, "Come on, man, fish sticks. All you got to do is put enough salt on it, and then fire that thing into ketchup. It's all. They're great." They're like. They're disgusting.
That's a tartar sauce, man.
Yeah. You know?
Tartar sauce.
So,
that's what that's.
So, no other thing. Now, did you put your cream tuna over toast or just eat it?
Absolutely. Over white, toasted white bread. And then you take a piece of white bread and you toast it, you cut it in half, and you have these little triangles, and you usually put about three, maybe if I was lucky, I could get four triangles of toast, laid one on the other, you know, a little bit, so it crosses the plate, and then that tuna casserole go on top of it.
No, my mom put peas in hers.
Yeah, so did, I'm sorry, yeah, you're right. Yeah, peas are killer in there. Yeah, my bad.
Peas.
Yeah.
And we would scoop that out and we'd eat it Friday nights before going to high school football games and things like that. It was back in the 60s, right? You didn't eat meat on Friday. It's I mean, as a Catholic, that's just the way it was. I think as most Christian families, you fasted on Friday. And so we grew up with fish sticks and, we grew up with cream tuna or tuna fish.
It was very affordable. It was very affordable for us.
Yeah. All these meals tend to be, my mom's pork chops. I mean, pork chops are cheap and they are. Yeah. And they're cheap, easy to make, but downright delicious. I love the potato chips over the top though.
Oh, that was such a bonus for me because they got crazy.
All right, we're going to take a break. The El Marine Radio head chef joins us. We're going to take about a 4-minute break. More of this program on a Friday. Let me just read an email. Mac, you know, I was thinking about the government shutdown and something you said earlier. For whatever reason, resonated with me. This kind of dysfunction is exactly what got Donald Trump elected. Sometimes I look at him as a president and wonder, how the hell did that guy get elected? But then it stays like today when our entire Congress can't get together to fund the government. And we as Americans that look to them to solve problems have had enough of it. And so we look for other solutions. And I would tell you that the frustration in the country is not something that they understand. And this is a reminder of how pissed most of quote unquote flyover country is at Washington, D.C. and how that guy got elected.
Yeah.
I think it's pathetic. I absolutely think it's pathetic. And if anybody is harmed by this, I think that Congress not only should make it right, but they should be absolutely punished for it. Their negligence that leads to harm to other people, that is absolutely what they're not supposed to do. Appreciate the thought this morning. Enjoy the program. I am making twice baked potatoes tonight. You have me drooling on my desk. Thank you very much to you and the chef. All right.
Right on.
Right on. No, twice baked potatoes, man. They're to die for. More of Allmarine Radio coming up next. For somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff, I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of Allmarine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Friday, Mike McNamara with you. The government shut down Friday, but we're not talking about it. We're talking about food. The All Marine Radio head chef continues with us very graciously. Mac, I've got a kitchen cleaning question for you. Here you go. Does the maestro have recommendations of things that he uses to clean in the kitchen? The rest of us use pretty basic stuff. Does he have other things that he uses that maybe he could enlighten us? It's ironic you mention your oven. I looked at ours last weekend, and it's filthy. And since I do most of the cooking, I figure I ought to clean it. I'm curious if he has any special concoctions that he uses, or if he uses the same stuff that we do.
Well, I pretty much use the same on the oven. It's an oven cleaner you spray on, turn the oven on, and then you heat it up, and it bakes any crusty stuff. I mean, it loosens any crusty stuff. And then when you the oven cools down, you wipe it off, and then I usually take kind of a sudsy water to get any chemical residue that's been left, and I'll wipe down the inside of the oven. Being married to the woman that I'm married to, if anything is spilled, the oven's still warm, and she'll clean it off after dinner right away. She doesn't let stuff bake on, and that's good advice. Anything else, you use Windex on your stuff, or you can use white vinegar. That cuts through stuff.
White vinegar?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And a sponge.
Right.
A little rectangular sponge.
Right.
Now, something that we discovered, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, are these little scrub pads that fit onto a handle.
Yeah.
And you pour the soap in through the end of the handle.
Yes.
And it drains down into the brush.
Right.
And it's got a little abrasive pad on it, and that's attached to a sponge.
Yes.
So you can get in and scrub things.
Yes.
And we use that a lot, and it saves us a lot of dish soap from always filling the way we grew up doing, filling the sink up with dish soap and then scrubbing everything. You still have to scrub anything, but you use this scrub pad with a handle full of soap, and you can see it in your grocery store. They're everywhere. But
no,
that's a neat little trick to know.
Yeah, I have one of those.
Yeah.
I saw it, and I'm like, yeah, that's something that lazy people would have. And
that's
so
me.
Yeah, so that's that. So I have one of those. Anything else relative to when you're cleaning a stovetop? I'm a bit of a clean freak in the kitchen. I don't like to walk out and see a dirty kitchen.
Yes.
Stovetop. What do you use to clean that? What kind of agent?
Well, if you have a flat top on like an electric stove.
Yes.
And the circles on the stove, no burners.
Right.
And which most of them are that way now.
Right.
They clean up pretty easily with soap and water and a sponge.
Right.
We have a stainless steel Wolf commercial oven with four burners.
Oh, let me ask you, your stove is,
yes.
Is electric, not gas?
No, it's gas.
Oh, it's gas.
You're
talking about others. Because those stoves that are, I don't know, it's kind of that ceramic that heats up. Don't those have a special, normally they have a special product that you're supposed to use, yes?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. And you'd have to follow the manufacturer's recommendation.
Right.
But, I've always scrubbed. I just, on stainless steel, you don't want to use, any kind of abrasive.
Abrasive, got it.
Like scouring pads. You want to use elbow grease. And a sponge, and get after it. But the thing is, you don't let it sit around. If something, you have a pot on the stove and it boils over, clean it up.
Right.
Don't
away.
Let it harden.
Yeah, that's
a no-no.
Yeah. The okay. So on a gas stove where you have burners.
Yes.
What, any recommendations? Is it just a standard cleaner that you would use on that?
It's just, dish soap and,
okay.
A scouring pad. You have, on a gas stove, you have these steel grates that lift up off, and then you have your just little burner unit and then a ceramic, metal underneath the grates, and that you can spray with any kind of scouring stuff. My wife and I use just soap and water and a little scouring pad on that portion underneath the it's not stainless steel, so it works really well. The grates doesn't matter. You just want to, if there's stuff that spills over, and with me cooking, there's always spots underneath the grates, and I wipe the grates down with a scouring pad, and then go over that with a damp washcloth, and then I set the burners aside, and then I go for the porcelain underneath the grates, and that takes a little elbow grease if I burnt something
when
I'm cooking.
And not wiped it up.
And my wife is always under my chin about cleaning up after myself, and I can never do it as well as she does.
Do you think that's something that cooks learn over time, is that, you know, to me, if you clean as you go, it makes everything at the end so much easier because there's not a whole lot left over. But if you pile it all up in the sink, it's a lot of work at the end of the meal. But while you're out there cooking, if you learn to cook and clean at the same time, it tends to lessen the burden, and it keeps the kitchen cleaner too. Is that something that cooks learn or?
Your parents should teach you, but if you're working in the kitchen, you'll learn from the chefs to clean as you go. It's paramount to keeping your kitchens clean because then nobody's slipping or burning themselves. And like we have a skillet that I'm going to cook the meat in today. And what I will do, it'll be crusty on it, but we have granite countertops. So I will take that skillet and put put it on, put soap suds and water, warm water in there, swish it around, and then sit it back on the stove until it cools down. But it, the process of cleaning has already started. So when it comes time to get serious about that skillet, I've done most of the work for it. Everything's loosened up. And then you just scrub a little bit, rinse it out, pat it dry, and cast iron. You don't let sit long in soap, and because it's cast iron and it will rust. So I take a little bit of Crisco, like maybe just a paper towel with some Crisco on it, and just rub the inside of my cast iron all the way around, inside, the sides, and the outside, and then put it away. And I set it on a piece of paper towel. We have drawers that slide out where I can stack my cook pads on.
Okay. All right, here's another email. Mac, I have a kind of cleaning question. Is it still necessary to wash fruits and vegetables when we bring them into our homes, or do they come to us in a pretty clean manner? Kim?
Good question. Great question. Well, for me, because they spray everything that you get in grocery stores, it's one thing. You still have to rinse everything off if you have your own garden. You bring it in, you might have little critters crawling around in there. But, I wash everything off. I rinse my blueberries, my strawberries, I rinse, pat dry so they don't soak up the water. I wash my baked potato when I got it home yesterday, and dried it. But, it's just, to be on the safe side, they have a wax on fruit, like apples, for example. You have to wash that off, or unless you're going to peel your apple before you eat it, just peel the skin off, which I do occasionally. So that would be my recommendation. And then, like, for example, the big heads of romaine. Okay?
Got it.
Now, I will fill a sink up with lukewarm salt water, lots of salt. And then I take it was attached to the ground, the core, and then I plunge it in and out of the water. And what that does, if there are any little critters that are down in the bottom, they can't handle the salt, so they'll get out of there. And then I drain the sink, and I drain the lettuce, and it's sitting I have a double sink, and I'm draining the lettuce. Then I fill the sink up again with ice-cold water. I rinse it off in there, plunging it like you're plunging your toilet.
Right.
And then I let it drain, and then I put it in the fridge with the stalk side down and the leaves up. And it still will drain a little bit, and when you do that, you will revive the lettuce. The water will crisp the lettuce even more. So it'll hold in your fridge for a couple of days instead of having to use it just right away. Okay?
I did not know.
Yeah, and with head lettuce, which everybody has, I take the core, hold the lettuce in my hand like a baseball, then I hit the core on the countertop. You just pound it. I mean, don't be a wuss about it. Just pound it. And then you take that core and you twist it, and a perfect little knob will come out.
Right.
Okay? Everybody knows that trick. It's better than trying to cut around it. And then you take about a teaspoon or tablespoon of water, or you can run on the opened up part under cold water, and then turn it upside down and let all that water drain out, and then store it with the core up, and you'll have lettuce that'll last you 3 days instead of 1 day, and maybe 4 days. And when you peel leaves off the head of lettuce, or as you and I like to do, cut ourselves a wedge and make a salad with that wedge. And you can put them in plastic bag with a little paper towel in the bottom of the plastic bag to soak up any water. And that's how you keep it fresh. It's very important to clean the produce because spinach everything.
Another question for you.
Yeah.
Mac, as long as we're talking about cleaning and preserving stuff, how does he preserve beef, chicken, fish? Does he freeze any of it, or does he buy it in small quantities when he's ready to eat it? How does the chef do that?
Okay. I'll give you two examples.
Okay.
If you're going to your fish market, you live in a place where you can get fresh fish. You can go down and order your fish that you're going to eat for 2 days.
Right.
Bring it home, cut it, and keep it in the fridge. If you do what I do, is I'll buy a side of fish, fresh fish. I get it overnighted to me. So I'll have maybe a 2.5, 3.5 side of salmon, fillet of salmon, with the skin on one side. Now, what I'll do is I'll cut off what we're going to use that day, and then I will take the skin off the fish before I cut it into portions. And the portions I cut, I wrap a little bit, put a saran wrap around it, and then my wife puts it in a cryovac maker that draws all the air out.
Right.
And then we freeze it. It's flash frozen. It's fresh. And you thaw your fish or your chicken or your meat out in the refrigerator for however long it takes, sometimes a day, a day and a half. And then you open up the package and you have pretty close to fresh fish or chicken or beef.
Okay. All right. So that's how
that's what I do. Okay. Now we ordered some prawns from Washington State, where I used to live, and they're called spot prawns. And they're the Native Americans get them out in Puget Sound, and there's a season for it, and they're sweet. They're maybe 20 to 24 to a pound, so they're not real monsters, but there's plenty, and we'll rinse them, and we'll freeze them. Yeah. We just keep out what we're going to eat. And then she cryovacs them, we date them, put how many are in each package, put it in the freezer. Now, we ordered 4 pounds of those, and we just ate the last pound about 2 weeks ago, and this was done 4 months ago.
Wow!
I ordered it.
Wow!
So you know, you have to. It really helps to have one of those cryovac machines because that really takes all the air out, and it keeps the product from getting freezer burn. You know. When you wrap stuff up in foil or saran wrap.
Are those machines expensive?
No, they're not too expensive. I think they're $100 or less. And they have special heavy-duty freezer bags. And it's absolutely fabulous. I will research that this week and have your answers next week on it. But and what types to recommend and what we use. My wife is a master at it. And you have to be careful because it sucks all the air out. And it, like she tried cookies one time to do it, and she over-revved and sucked too much air out. And it took all those cookies and made one big giant cookie.
Nice.
It just squashed the hell out of all of it. So, you know, there's different degrees of sucking the air out. You want to suck all the air out so it just fits around the product. And then you're in the front row. Okay.
The Almarin Radio Head Chef with us talking about cleaning, talking about kind of all the support functions that go on in a kitchen here on a day. The
great questions today, folks.
Yeah, and kind of interesting things we don't talk about or yeah. normally associate with you know with when we talk about cooking. Here's another yeah. email. Matt, can we go back to the twice baked potato? Could he go over the cheese that he used one more time? And could he also name other cheeses that would do just as well? And is there a cheese that he wouldn't use in a baked potato? I've heard him talk about season to taste. Curious.
Well, start with season to taste is salt and pepper.
Okay.
You're going to have chives, cream cheese, sour cream in there, and whatever cheese you choose. Now, today, since my wife grated some white cheddar up from Vermont, they make spectacular cheese in California and all over the country now. But you want a hard cheese that melts well, like a Jarlsberg, a Swiss cheese, a Monterey Jack, a yellow or white cheddar. Those are the cheeses that I've used before. Fontina, that's an Italian semi-soft cheese. It grades, but it, you know, I wouldn't go there. Yeah, you can use a provolone cheese. You can grate a provolone cheese. It's what's your favorite cheese? Then use it accordingly. If you just want straight Parmesan cheese, grate Parmesan cheese and put it inside the mixture. But I don't want something that sharp. That's too salty for me, and I like it just on the top because it browns real nice.
Right.
And also gives you an indication of when you're splitting stuff.
Here's another question about twice baked potatoes. If I am hosting a larger party, in the past we have cut the potatoes in half as a way of making them last longer and feeding more people. Is that a mistake?
Absolutely not. At the restaurant, when I had to do 50 or 100 baked potatoes, twice baked potatoes, I got my potatoes in 50-pound boxes, and they were pretty good size, at least a half a pound each. And you don't want to overdo it, but if you're having a personal party, you get a one-pound potato or something close to that. You bake it, and then you cut it in half when it comes out, and then you scoop it out and put everything in a bowl, mash it. Then we're talking, I don't know how many people you're having. Let's just say 8. You'd probably use a pretty close to a pound of butter, 8 ounces of cream cheese, 2 cups of sour cream, one whole bunch that you of chives that you can buy in the grocery store that are pre-cut, and then in these little packets. That's what I did. Use a whole packet of that, and chives are like an onion garlic flavor, and then salt and pepper to taste. And if you didn't want to use cream cheese or sour cream, then you make it like mashed potatoes with milk or cream is what I do. I like the, I don't want my spuds runny, but I don't want them too stiff either. Okay?
Okay. All right.
But yes, cutting the spud in half is perfectly acceptable and you're not blowing it. Just don't take too much potato out. Leave enough so there's just maybe an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch in meat left in the potato. Okay?
There you have it. There you have it. The another question. I'm going to do ribs tonight, Mac, and I constantly fight the grease fire. Does the chef have a way that I can make great ribs and not do char-broiled ribs?
Sure. You take the ribs and you put them in a big pan that covers all the ribs. You sit them up on one end, the bone side up. You put it in that can. We use big, they're called hotel pans, which are like 6-inch sides. And we put the ribs in. First of all, we rub whatever seasoning we're going to put on the rib when it's dry. Then we put it in there. Then we fill it up with water about 3/4 of the way up, and then we cover it with aluminum foil. Then we put it in the oven, and we bake them for at least an hour to an hour and a half. And then when you take that out, you take a peek and make sure that the ribs are just about fall off the bone. You don't want them completely falling off the bone because you want to have something to hold the meat on. And then you let that cool down, or you drain all the liquid off. Then you have a baking sheet. The ribs are done, but you want to make it a barbecue rib thing. You have a baking sheet with a rack on it, and then you brush whatever barbecue sauce on your rib that you're using. And then you bake it in the oven for a minimum of, 15, 20 minutes to 30 minutes at 400 degrees or 450. Not hotter than 450. Say 400. That's nice and it's warm, but it's slow enough. And then that's, how you can do ribs without having them on a grill for 16 hours or 6 hours or whatever in the hell you're going to do. But if you want to take that product and you do, if you live in a place where you can turn your grill on, you take these ribs out, you, put them on the grill. You don't need to turn any, smoke on or smoke it. And just brush your barbecue sauce on, and then you get your that charcoal flavor, the grill flavor. But that's how I would do it. I'd bake them in the oven after you get done boiling them.
All right.
Okay?
All right. So you'd bake them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I want to talk about, somebody who's going to grill them. That is always the fight, when you grill ribs is try not to turn them black. If you're going to grill them, how do you not turn them black?
You don't put the sauce on until the last 5 minutes.
You're still going to fight the fat, though. You're still going to fight the fat fight, right?
Yes, but you know, if you're grilling them for 3 hours or however long your recipe says, you put a dry rub on it. You let the dry rub sit overnight. You slap them on the grill. You can do indirect heating, or very low direct heat. And you keep flipping them and checking on them. And then, when they're tender to your liking, then you slap the barbecue sauce on and you grill it. And there you have it. And that's 5 minutes, and that'll impregnate the rib, the sauce will, and give it that nice high pro glow that we all love.
Right.
And but the longer you leave that barbecue sauce on the grill, absolutely the sugars in the sauce will turn black.
Got it. Okay, and the other part is talk about indirect heat and its role in cooking good ribs. And the bottom line though is if you're going to cook good ribs, you got to slow cook them. Yes.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
250 degrees. That's
yeah,
about
that's,
it.
That's the big. I think that's the hardest thing for people to learn is that you know you're going to throw ribs on a grill. I think most America has come to, just by cooking shows and whatnot, and all the different things you see on TV about ribs and guys cooking them and things like that. I think a lot of America has kind of, got smart about how you cook ribs. And the reason that they got burned was that somebody was cooking them straight over the grill. With all that beautiful fat in it, that makes ribs taste the way they taste, and it doesn't work very good. Simply doesn't work very good. And so, there's a reason they get good ribs taste the way they do, and that is the people that cook them know how to cook them, and you can't cook them fast.
And that indirect heat, what it does is, you pull down your lid. You don't want the heat directly underneath the rib. You want it off to one side. And so it'll continue, the ribs will continue to cook, but not on direct heat. And that way, it cooks slower, and the juice stays in the meat. It's not just squeezed out of it by having direct heat on it. So, that is the way I would do it, that I have done it.
Okay. I think it gets difficult when you're cooking over high heat. If you just take that out of the equation and say, you're going to slow cook them, and then there's not really, it's just a question of the meat cooking, you maintaining that temperature at 250. And if you do that, it they're kind of tough to screw up.
Yeah, and indirect heat, folks, not direct heat. That's the key to the highway.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The I've got one more email, and then I will let you go this morning. Mac, I too have a question about ribs. Does the chef have a preference for a type of rib that he thinks is better than others?
Well, I tell you what I like is I like ribs that have a lot of meat on it. Now you can get these little baby back ribs that probably equal part meat to bone, and they're delicious and all ribs I love. But the bigger the rib, the meatier it is, the better I like it. And that's usually a pork rib. But if you ever have an opportunity to try beef ribs, that are smoked and barbecued. If you're a beef guy, they're spectacular because there is a ton of meat on those ribs and you only need a few, pretty hard. You can't eat a whole rack of the beef ribs, but you need three or four of those. And, that's a lot of meat. But, you know, some days I could eat a whole rack of barbecue ribs. And, just because, you know, it's a lot of work. I love to get messy like that. Get my hands and forearms and mouth just lathered in sauce. I mean, that's part of the ritual for me. I'm a little neater now than I used to be. But, they're out of this world. It's whatever your favorite cut is what you, and my favorite cut is the big rib, big pork ribs, and then, the beef ribs. And not everybody does beef ribs.
I've had your ribs before. Why don't more people do beef ribs?
Well, I don't know. I think they're harder to get. I used to get ribs in this place in Washington State, a steak and seafood house, and they would order their prime ribs with the bone in, and then they would cut the prime rib out, and then they'd have a rack of bones, and then they'd cut their bones, and it would take them maybe a week to get enough bones to serve beef ribs for a weekend, and then they'd start the process all over again. But pork ribs are easy to come by, and it's a lot cheaper than beef ribs. Now, I served buffalo ribs at my restaurant in Grand Forks, and I loved, that's beef, and bison buffalo. That is, they're big. You've had them. I think you have.
Yes.
And,
their favorite, my daughter Catherine.
Yeah.
She loves them.
And yeah, that's right. She did love them.
Yes.
But yeah, and I served those every night. And I served, the pork ribs, but I, my preference was the buffalo rib. Very, very good. And done right, very tender.
I just got one more email and we'll make this the last one. Mac, another rib question. Is there a way that you can approach somebody who does cook them over a flaming inferno, complete with the water bottle next to him, and burns them every week? Does the chef have a way that I can approach my father-in-law and help him?
I sure do.
You do? How do you do that? All kinds
I'm glad. That's a great question.
All kinds of
because
people
that has
live
happened
with,
to me.
All kinds of people live with that pain, right?
Oh, it's terrible. What you do is you go to your bookstore. You find a book or like that Cook's Illustrated magazine we've talked about, but you can get on cooking ribs or barbecuing in general. And they will explain, and you give him the book as a little gift for thanking him for having this over. I thought you might want to look at this and see some different techniques. That's very diplomatic. And if they don't know any better, they don't know any better. Now, I grew up the first few years of my life, I loved barbecue chicken wings. And my mom would throw them all in a bowl and then throw them on the Weber, already with the sauce on it. And I don't know, for the first 5 years of my barbecue life, I ate black chicken wings. So I feel his pain, but bring him a book on barbecue. Gift wrap it nice. Put a little note on there. And this, I found this book. The different techniques are fabulous. And that's how I would approach it.
Okay. So buy him a book.
Yes. On barbecue.
On barbecue.
And next time you have to go over and endure the pain, hand them the book as a thank you for having you over to destroy your stomach. Oh, God, I've been there so many times. Oh,
does it work, or do they ever push back? And do they ever push back and say, "Was I doing something wrong? Is there something that you're trying to tell me?" Or do they change?
Well, if they push back like that, then you explain, "Yes, you're doing something wrong. This book will give you some ideas on how not to burn your ribs every time." It's called indirect heat. No, that's getting too personal, but read the book and it might help you with not burning the ribs. And be honest. The most important thing is to be honest. I mean, if he keeps
no,
doing
that's
this,
not the most important thing. People get their feelings hurt.
Yeah, well, I'd rather have their feelings hurt and they see the light, or you won't get invited again. It's not rocket.
Oh, that's how it's going to go?
That's how it's going to go. I mean, that's how it would go to me. I would be, you know, I saw this book, and it had some different techniques in it, and I thought you might be interested in trying a few. So, it's not, you know, you're not getting under his chin, you're being honest with him, short of saying, "Your ribs suck, you burn them every damn time you come over, I'm sick and tired of this shit, and I can't take it anymore, read the book, start cooking ribs, for God's sake." That's the other way.
That's called flipping out on the dude.
That's called losing it. A barbecue meltdown.
The Almarin Radio head chef been gracious enough to join us here. Oh, hold on, one more. Mac, does he have a book that?
I love it.
Does he have a book that he recommends for grilling? Because I am living this nightmare. Once a month, we go to my in-laws. And my father-in-law loves to grill, and he's the worst. Is there a book that Kim recommends that will help him?
I don't have any one specific book. I like that Cook's Magazine when they specialize in beef and barbecuing. There's a magazine that has it. But I would go to the bookstore, and I would look. The key to this is understanding the book. It's not too fancy. It's very simple procedures on how to barbecue, how to rub things down, what to rub it down, how long to cook it. You want to look that book up and make sure it's easy to understand. And the bookstore proprietor might know, but I would get in there myself, and you know exactly your father-in-law's skill level, which is lacking, obviously, in barbecuing, needs your help.
Yeah.
And that's all we're trying to do here. But make sure the book is easy reading, and understandable and easy to follow. And
easy reading, understandable, easy to digest. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to break it down Barney style for our hammerhead father-in-law. So lots of lots of big pictures.
Yeah, and believe me, there are some great books out there about making barbecue simple kind of books, and there are some that are very complicated that have all kinds of references in it, and one has just sauces, one has rubs, you know, you cook all kinds of stuff. You have to look over the book and see how readable it is.
Okay. All right. But at the end of the day,
it's something you need. I please do it, because you'll be doing him a favor.
Right.
And then the next time you come over, the next month, you'll see whether he read the book
or not,
or he didn't give a shit. And then then me personally, well, how'd you like that book?
So you'd bring it up.
To it. And you just suck it up and get ready to endure another briquette for dinner.
Another briquette. You know what that is? Okay, another briquette with a lot of sauce, though.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable, a lot of sauce.
Unbelievable, a lot of sauce. So
you have to take your shirt off to eat it.
And you know what? But when you talk to their wives and stuff, and you
see,
it's like, he's been doing this forever, and he knows it, right?
Yeah,
he knows it. Well, maybe he thinks it's okay, but you know, and you talk to your, you know, you talk to your wife, and you're like, do you guys eat this? Oh yes, my dad. He's such a great guy. He's such a great guy. You know, nobody wants to hurt his feelings. He's killing us. This is literally killing us.
Now, another way you can do it is invite him over to your house and taste your barbecue, and that's another approach. And then you do the same thing he did, but you do it properly, and he'll go, "Jeez, this is really good. How'd you do this?" Then you got another opening.
I think that's the way is, and then you have the mother gush over it. This is all choreographed, by the way. You have the mother gush over it. You have the daughter. Everybody's gushing over it. It's kind of an ambush on the guy. And you talk about, hey, I'm going to slow cook these ribs. And then what you're hoping that he says is, you know what? I need to give this a try. These are really good. Oh, and then, you know, the daughter's gushing, the wife's gushing.
Yeah, but you have to set everybody up and tell them it's an ambush.
Right.
And that you're going to save your father-in-law.
Yeah.
And
short of doing an intervention and hurting his feelings.
A barbecue intervention.
Yeah. But no. These emails are all from different people, and they all go through the same thing, right?
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, and so it's just like, what do we do? Help us. And but again, I think cooking shows and the number of cooking shows that deal with grilling and smoking certainly have, I think the casual person, even me, who doesn't watch a ton of cooking stuff, I'll sit and when I see something that I do or that is interesting, I will certainly watch that. I will certainly watch that.
Yeah. Well, it's well worth it, but, that might be the best solution, is have him over and cook the same thing he does, but do it right. And choreograph the gush. And then that might be the most diplomatic way, but, otherwise you gotta just have an intervention in another way. And not just say, hey, can't do that.
I know. No, but it is. It's always a delicate thing in a family. Oh, we don't want to hurt his feelings.
Oh, gosh, yes. Sure is.
And whatnot. All right, you have any big plans for the weekend?
I'm going to watch the football. The Sewer on television tonight. They're in Duluth. They're on CBS, so you might be able to pick it up.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the University of North Dakota men's hockey team that we're both big fans of. So
very big fan, and so that's going to be great. And then I don't know if we're going to televise tomorrow night's game. Didn't seem to think so, but you never know. But yeah, and then football tomorrow and Sunday.
This just in from the Associated Press. The president has invited Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer to the White House to try to reach a deal to avert a shutdown. So there's 11 hours and 16 minutes before the shutdown happens. So we'll see. But
General Kelly has gotten through to him, that dickhead.
Well, I don't know. I
listened to you before we came on, and he's doing his.
Well, no, I'll tell you what. I don't think.
Thank God he's there.
Well, no, I don't think. But I said this. I've said this for a long time. There's not one position that Donald Trump has taken. For instance, what he articulated in that meeting, that he was open to a path, maybe not to citizenship for the 11 million, but hey, we'll do the DACA thing. That's not even an issue. Those kids need to be taken care of. And so when you sat there and listened to that, there's none of, I know the right-wing wackos, you know, want something different. You know, they want a wall from sea to shining sea, and they want, but that's not, that will never happen. The nation's not for that. And they want 11 million people deported. That's not happening. And Donald Trump has signaled, hey, look, I'll make a deal with you. And so I'll tell you this. I mean, anybody who's watched the stock market now go through 26,000 and has watched their 401k and has seen the announcement that Apple made this week, they're going to pay $38 billion in a one-time tax to bring their money back to the United States and then invest another $30 billion in facilities around the country, and then one bigger facility for customer support. Now, I will tell you this. Donald Trump's not a political ideophile. He wants to make it better, and he wants to make a deal. And so I think it's very interesting. I think the problems, honestly, aren't with Trump. Trump's biggest problems are with his Twitter account, okay? But I think he's shown that he's a deal guy, and he wants to make it better. And so to me, the biggest problem this country has is the United States Senate. They stop more stuff, and we're watching it today. They stop more stuff than any other entity on the planet. And it's you just look at it and you say, and again, you look at it and you say, and it just reminds you, this is how Trump got elected. This is how Trump got elected, is this kind of dysfunctional bullshit in Washington, D.C. And so, again, Mike Pence would probably do everything Trump is doing without all the craziness, okay? But I don't know that Pence would be the deal maker that Trump is, because Trump is not afraid to take it. He knows he's going to get it from the right wing of the Republican Party. But he's essentially said, I don't care. I'm going to make a deal, and I'm going to make it better, and then the chips fall where they may. So he's his own worst enemy at times, but I think in terms, he's not a politician. And so I hope that I hope that they avert this, because people do get hurt in these shutdowns, and the people that, do the shutdowns are never, well, they never get hurt by any of this. And so I just hope that anyway. All right, sir.
That's all we can do is hope.
Yeah. Have a good weekend.
You too, buddy. Thank you, everyone.
All right. There you have it. The one and only. All Marine Radio head chef Kim Holmes. We'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, A text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On politicians today. On a Friday. On Monday, pretty geeked about Carl Marlanis coming back on, and we'll get a chance to talk to Carl about two different things. One is racism in the Marine Corps. This past Monday, celebrated the nation celebrated the birth of Martin Luther King. So got to thinking about racism in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps' process of integration, and also I'm trying to. I'm working on another interview for later in the week, but I talked to a good friend of mine, Jess Humphreys. So Jess comes from an incredible family, the Humphrey family. His father, Robert Humphrey, look him up, a Marine lieutenant on Iwo Jima, wounded. But he just sent a picture that appeared in Life magazine. In 1948, his dad goes to Harvard Law School. And so the picture is of he and a blind black student at Harvard Law School. And the student had got a scholarship. I want to say his name is Huntington or Hollingsworth or something like that. Starts with an H. And so Humphreys doesn't know the guy. He goes to class and he sees this guy sitting by himself and he walks over and he says hi. And they strike up a conversation. He's blind. He's living off campus and doesn't really know anybody. And so Robert Humphreys says, hey, I'm going to get a room on campus, and you and I are going to become roommates. And that they did. And just his dad's involved. Robert Humphrey, look him up. Unbelievable life. He gets involved in working with different cultures. Post-war Turkey, the United States is having a problem in Turkey in that the local population has started to turn against Americans. Well, wait a minute. Americans, we were just the coolest people on the planet. What happened? And, well, what happened was we became the ugly American. And and so Bob Humphrey goes there, and the Air Force had done all these different studies, and they were just saying, well, they just want more money, yada, yada, yada. So he goes out and he talks to them. And they give, they say, you're rude. You're rude to our culture. You're rude to our customs. You're rude to our women. And we don't like that. And so he comes back and he starts his program in Turkey. The DOD then sends him, or the State Department then sends him to South Korea, where they're having a similar problem. And all the, everywhere he goes, you know what he uses to teach this? He uses boxing, because he's a golden gloved boxer. From Korea, they send him to Vietnam, and Jess told me last night that they had asked him to go to Vietnam. The Marines had, Chuck Krulak, had asked him to go to Vietnam and work with the combined action platoons that were working in villages. And help them do what they were, you know, do what they were supposed to do, which is, again, in counterinsurgency stuff, a lot of stuff that we do that special forces guys do today. So he said no a couple times. And then Jess's uncle, the youngest brother in the family, I believe Robert's the oldest brother, is killed in Vietnam. And he said, and then my dad decided he would go. And so he went. And he's just this incredible guy who teaches these this incredible story about leadership. And Jack Hoban tells great stories about meeting Jess's dad in graduate school in San Diego, and him looking at Jack and saying, "You're a Marine, aren't you?" "Yes, sir." And then he said very quickly, he made me feel very small after I had, you know, thought I was all that in a bag of chips. So just as dad involved in the Marine Corps' dealing with race relations in the 70s. After he left Vietnam, he came back to the continental United States to work with the Marine Corps. And guess what it involved? Boxing. Yeah. You know, he said, look, there's when somebody thinks they're better than you, often the way it manifests itself is in this physical arrogance. But you make people get in the ring, and there's this spirit of camaraderie and about fighting that people gain from each other. And he said it's magical in terms of teaching respect. And he said, and once you have physical respect for somebody else, and it doesn't mean that they can kick your ass, but it means that they have the courage to go in there and fight with you. And that everybody fights. You create this mutual respect. Robert Humphrey, Humphrey. He wrote a book entitled Leadership for a New Millennium that you should put on your reading list, and you should go ahead and get that. So we're going to do this. I'm working on something on that. And then we're also going to have a couple other people on. One is a guy named Jeff Zazulowitz. He's never been on, but he's a writer for Navy Times. He's been following events in the Pacific Fleet, in the 7th Fleet. And so we'll get him on to get his take on the charges brought against four naval officers, two skippers, on the McCain and the Fitzgerald, and then two other officers on the USS Fitzgerald. And then Beth, former Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel SJA, Beth Harvey's going to join us. We're going to talk about the legal road through the court-martial system that those two officers will face, and what is the precedent in terms of the Navy convicting on those charges. So, interesting week next week. And there'll be other things as well. But that's as it lays right now. So, on a Friday, thanks for joining us. My thanks to the All Marine Radio head chef, the maestro, Pete Kimball Holmes, who's been always a great friend of the program. A lot of great cooking advice. Cleaning advice, twice baked potato advice, and how to woo your father-in-law, your brother-in-law, or some other misfit cook who burns ribs all the time and burns other foods, maybe how to woo him to the bright side. Yeah. maybe how to woo him. Normally women don't burn for him like that. They're a little better than men. Maybe a lot better. But they tend to leave men. Grilling is a man's job. I don't know why. I don't know how the hell that happened. So, have a great weekend. On a Friday, Allmarine Radio is over and out. Oh, by the way, the reason that our government's being held up and shut down is that stupid 60 cloture rule in the Senate that the Senate, the United States Senate, adopts on their own was not the idea of the Founding Fathers. The Senate ran the same way the House did, simple majorities. In all things. Archaic, self-adopted stupidity. That our nation's government is going to be held up by a group of idiots who adopt idiot rules. So, I thought I'd leave you with that. And again, and it's only, again, it's a good reminder though. How did Donald Trump get elected? With all the tweeting? Because people are fed up with this shit. And here we go again. Alright, I feel better now. Have a wonderful weekend. This program repeats itself momentarily. So if you joined us late, don't touch that dial. You have a lot to learn about, you have a lot to learn about food. And some about current events as well. So, have a great weekend.